Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
It turns out his music studio is right around the corner from my friend.
No way. I was listening to a podcast, Reply All, and they get on a boat in the Gowanus, and they talk all about the you know, gonorrhea that Gowanus has. And I was like, I know what that is. I know all about that.
Exactly. We had our Gowanus education. Gowanus.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny, right? Yeah. So here, what are you... Oh, no, wait, I've not started. I'm adult. Okay.
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theatre Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with milkshakes and music.
Does your milkshake bring all the boys to the yard?
Let's just check. Nope. No boys there. There's a fox.
Is that new gay slang for a particular kind of man who looks a certain way?
Would that be like a ginger pup?
This is the most existential question I think I've reached all day.
It's been some day. That would work, though. That would work.
That would work. Yeah. With someone, we'll start it. You heard it here first.
What does the fox say? What are you drinking today? Let's move swiftly on away from pup play.
I am eating peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
That's not allowed. Hang on. It's not. You can't have bar snacks. What's this?
It's related. It's important to the story, kind of.
At least say, like, you know, a peanuts and Cracker Jack flavored milkshake.
What are you drinking? What did you come?
I'm drinking, and this is deep. This has levels. Okay. Uh-huh. So my favorite red wine. Is Casillero del Diablo.
Oh, okay. I see what direction you went.
Right. The devil.
Yes. I put that much together.
Thanks. Thank you. And that is actually a true story. That is a true story. That is my favorite wine.
True. Box. Was it an engaging story? That's maybe the second question.
We'll ask that later. Maybe leave us a comment. Were you moved?
We're going off the rails already, and we haven't even gotten to the quiz question.
It's dangerous. Well, let's get to the quiz question. Let's do it. It's your turn, sir.
Here it is. Originally, Act 1 of this show was slated to end with a round of musical chairs emceed by a gorilla. However, the producer didn't think that this number worked, much to the dismay of the choreographer. Strangely, when they adapted the musical into a movie, this same choreographer performed in the new number that replaced the original gorilla piece. What show could this be?
Gorillas in the Mist, the musical? Is it?
I don't know if anyone got this.
Two people got it.
Yes! Congratulations.
Including Deborah, by the way, who's been every podcast.
Knocking it out of the park.
She's been trying. No, she's never made it. Oh. But this time, she did it.
Jimmy so keeps
we're
track
proud
of
you.
Of answers.
I do. At least I've got a very large score chart on my wall. One of you will eventually win a prize. We still not say what it is. It's Damn Yankees. So, right, straight off the bat.
Yeah. Do you understand why the title of this show is funny?
Do people say that a lot? Is it because the Yankees always win?
Well, okay. In the American Civil War, which I have to specify the American Civil War for you, but we would just call it the Civil War.
The Civil War, yeah.
The North were known by the South as the Yankees.
The Yankees, yep.
And so that's where the term, perhaps related to the Yanks, which, you know, you might use as somewhat derogatory or joking towards Americans. And so there is a saying that has definitely fallen out of favor in recent years. I don't know how popular it was in the 50s, but the concept of those damn Yankees is saying those silly Northerners.
Aha, with their anti-slavery opinions.
Yeah, with their quick city folk like ways.
Exactly.
But then, of course,
and that's what this musical is really about.
Really, it's about city folk. No, but then it's a triple entendre, because then there's the damn Yankee saying, there's those damn Yankees, the baseball team, and then there's the concept of being damned, which plays into the whole Faustian devil. It's a very clever title. That's all I'm saying.
It's smart. It is. So it's not like a big commentary. It's not like...
No.
It's
I mean,
like the phrase.
We'll talk about baseball, Jimmy. We'll talk about baseball.
I'm excited to talk about baseball. We can educate me, because... I mean, I know the song.
Yeah.
I could sing you the full song.
Take me out to the ball game.
Uh-huh. And that's that's impressive that I could sing the full thing.
I think that's very impressive. I can't sing... whatever you sing in the middle of a cricket match.
We sing nothing. That'd be hugely impolite. We're British. We have many sectarian football chants, which I can't see over the air because of legalities, probably. So, hooray. So here, did you know that this musical is number two by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross?
Yeah, the very shortly-lived dynamic duo.
Yes, because Mr. Jerry Ross died when he was like in his late 20s.
Yeah, I think he was
29 when he died.
He was 29 and he passed away, which is a shame. So, but Damn Yankees and Pajama Game, certainly their hits.
Absolutely. We also had the book by George Abbott, who directed the stage musical. He also directed the film as well, which came along later. And Douglas Wallop, who wrote the book that it was based on, also helped with the book of the musical. So it was a very little stramash, little orgy of creativity, which is nice.
The show opened on Broadway in 1955. It played forever. It played for more than 1,000 performances, which is huge for the 50s. And it won Best Musical and had a 94 revival with Bebe Neuwirth and Victor Garber. And it has run in the West End. This surprises
me. It's run twice. It's never been like, yes, the West End run of Damn Yankees. We were all there.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm sure when we start to talk about baseball, we'll maybe work out why. there's been a discrepancy.
Yeah.
It has been over here. So you mentioned earlier, Thomas, when talking about the word damn, you mentioned the word of the good old Mr. Faust.
Yes, this is a Faust tale. Faust set in... It's contemporaneous, right? We're in the 50s. Set in the 50s about baseball, and one poor real estate agent, Joe Boyd, his Washington Senators are just not doing it, Jimmy.
No.
But he is tempted by the devil, or Mr. Applegate, as we call him in this show. And if he sells his soul to the devil, he can become a young baseball player and save the Senators.
Hooray! Which he does.
Which he does.
And he does. He sells his soul. And it works out, and they do really, really well. And not only do they go for the pennant, but they're ready for the World Series, which I actually know what that means.
Good for you.
Thank you. But along the way to try and... Joe starts to miss his wife, Meg, and because he's new, young Joe Hardy, he obviously can't go back to his wife because she doesn't know who he is, and he can't be like, I sold my soul to the devil. So to like try and bring him back to the dark side, the devil summons his chief temptress called Lola Banana.
She has a last name.
Briefly.
I've been listening to this show since I was like 7, and I don't think I even knew that.
Yeah, Lola Banana. That's how he introduces her. And yeah, she ends up falling for Joe. Wow, what a magnet he must be. And kind of ends up deceiving Applegate into the final coup de grace, which, hey, we won't spoil.
You could probably figure what? It out.
It's a happy ending.
Which I do want to talk about at some point. But at the last minute, Joe gets out of his contract with the devil, but still manages to hit that last home run or whatever it is in baseball.
Yep.
And is transformed back and returns to his wife, and, you know, they have a tearful reprise. That is happy.
Aww. And everyone loves baseball. Yeah. So let's begin, shall we? Oh, wait, actually, no. I'm going to retreat. We're going to retreat back.
Okay.
Why is it called Applegate?
That's a great
Is it
question.
Because of the whole apple thing?
Oh,
in the Bible?
Ooh.
The only etymological thing that I could think of.
Yeah,
was because of an apple.
That'd be really clever. I mean, from a story structure standpoint, or even just an ease of acting standpoint, I think it makes more sense to give him a name as opposed to calling him like Mr. Devil. And they do, like, they reinforce that Lola always calls him Boss. They have some of this stuff going underneath it, but I don't know if there's that would it's I would strange, I would buy that it? As a justification.
Because what do they call the guy in Witches of Eastwick? What's he called? He's called Daryl Van Horn.
See, and there they're playing on
kind
horns.
Of sounds a bit more devilish. Yeah. The horn thing, but yeah, I just because I was like, is Applegate? Is it like I don't know? Is there a part of like American history that I'm not aware
of? Not that I know of.
And the gate and the devil. And,
I don't think so. This is going to be the time where we find out that like in Faust he's just called Applegate or something.
Yeah, oh, maybe it's something to do with that. That could be it. Or, hey, it's just a cute old name.
Yeah, cute. Well, it's something, that's for sure.
It's something, all right. Okay, now we can get into it.
What do we got? Heart! What do we got? Heart! What do we got?
We got heart! Miles and miles and miles of heart!
Jimmy, have you ever been to a baseball game?
I haven't. I really haven't. And I wanted to. When we were in the States, I so wanted to. Madison Square Garden was right there. And we didn't go.
And you could have just walked into one.
Are they always on? Do you have like a season?
Yeah, 6 months out of every year.
Okay, great.
Baseball has a pretty long season. Starts in spring, goes through the summer, ends, I don't know, in August or maybe early September. I'm not a sports guy, but I know a little of sports. I know a little bit about baseball. A lot of it has to do with Chicago has two competing crosstown teams.
Exactly.
Which is a big deal. Can you name them?
The Bulls.
That's, no, that's basketball.
I like Chicago. White Sox.
White Sox. There you go.
White. Yes, because the Boston Red Sox.
Boston Reds. Yep.
And you're the White Sox. And I didn't know there was another one. Dolphins. That's Miami.
All those Chicago Dolphins. It's
you're on a coast.
We are not. It's on a lake.
Oh, is it a lake? Well, it's big. It's a big old lake.
I'm going to buy you a map.
Thank you.
No, I'll give you two hints. It's alliteration and it's a mammal.
Chicago chimps.
It's a baby mammal. It's Chicago also gay slang.
Chicks. I don't know.
They're the Chicago Cubs.
The Cubs. I knew that. Do you know how I knew that?
What? How?
For Reddit gifts 1 year, I got a guy a Cubs hat. I knew that. Yeah, he liked the Cubs. It's an orange sea on a blue background. See, I know things.
It's a red sea on a blue background, but we won't
orange,
hold it against
you. Med, wed, whatever.
So, both the White Sox and the Cubs have won the World Series in my lifetime.
Okay.
And there's all sorts of intercity politics, which I won't bore you with, but, like, having two baseball teams in one town is sets you up for a lot of drama to begin with. Like, good
I
sports
know
drama.
This.
You know all...
Well, not... Well, I know all about good sports drama because I'm from Glasgow, and we have such a thing called the Old Firm. Have you even heard of the Old Firm?
No.
So we have Celtic and Rangers. If I'm sure if you know any soccer team from the UK, it might be one of them.
I like that you said soccer. No, but I don't know.
Well, I'm translating. I speak fluent American, so I may as well. But yes, they're like, you know, intense... sectarian, deep, like violent, is nasty.
Yes.
They do. I don't know if it's the same for Chicago.
I will say, take picture that and then multiply it times 100.
Really?
Let's specifically talk about the Chicago Cubs because they won the World Series last year. And prior to that, the last time the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, the Ottoman Empire existed.
Oh my gosh.
They hadn't won the World Series for, I don't know, something like 114 years. That might be a little That's too crazy. Much, but it was either close to or
time.
A century. And so it was a big deal. They had a parade downtown that was in one of the top 20 gatherings of human beings in to ever happen, like by sheer number. It was huge, and
that's crazy.
People care about this sort of stuff, and people, because it was the Cubs, people had cared about it for a long, long time, and the Cubs notoriously were a losing team for a long, long time.
Well, that happened in Lost, the TV show Lost. I know you don't watch it, but there's a whole thing about the Red Sox winning the series.
Yeah, I mean, it was a punchline for years that, oh, this year the Cubs will win the series.
Right.
But so, you know, and secondary to that, and you should know this, Jimmy. Boys Town in Chicago, the Gaborhood, is adjacent to Wrigleyville, where Wrigley Stadium, the baseball diamond for the Cubs, is. And so... gay culture and baseball culture happen to exist next to each other in Chicago, which is really funny because the Cubs bar is called the Cubby Bear. And I always thought it would be fun to open another one just down the street for a different clientele and watch the confusion.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, instantly, I'd say if I saw a bar called the Cubby Bear, I would be expecting a certain thing.
Yes, and you would hate it.
I'd be vastly disappointed.
But all this
Yeah.
I'm not a baseball fan. I don't follow the Cubs very particularly. But when they were in the World Series, I was white knuckling it. Like, I was so excited. It's contagious.
Okay. I get that. I've been to a couple of sports matches in my life, and I quite enjoy rugby. And that's about it. But, you know, I enjoy it. It's like we've talked about this before, the theater sports.
Right. Yes.
Corner Avenue. But, right, so in terms of baseball, so I'm surprised that it's, like, there's, like, a violent edge to it.
I mean,
there's, like, an aggression.
Maybe I exaggerate too much in the, you know, I've seen all the videos online of people rushing the football pitch after the game and, you know, getting
the way you said
it.
Football was perfect.
Thank you.
Football.
Yeah, well, because I'm trying to differentiate it from American football.
Between football. Yeah.
Which is different. And I would say that doesn't happen quite so much in American sports.
I mean, like, we get... because for us, it's, like, infused into, like, culture in Glasgow. So it's, like, from when you're 4 years old, you get asked, what team do you support? And if you say the wrong one, you get beaten up.
Yes, and I would say that's
it's
not
like that kind of
so
thing.
Much because here it's often locality based. Like Chicago's very unique. And even in Chicago, depending upon where you live, it's expected that you support either the Sox or the Cubs. Sox are on the south side, Cubs are on the north side. And so generally, everyone at your school probably supports the same team, you know? And I think that's pretty true with a lot of sports. And American sports teams, as when we start our sports ball podcast, we can talk more about this. But they'll get transferred sometimes. And so like a whole team will like up and move from one state to another state. And then who are you loyal to now? It doesn't happen terribly often. Certainly hasn't happened with some of the more longer standing teams. But I think that can break some of that culture stuff. And there's a whole trading culture, which I don't understand, where like players move around between teams and we're going to give you this for that. And I think that breaks some of that too. But
yeah, well, ours is just related to religion. So it's like...
Okay. That makes sense. Is there a lot of superstition around sports games? I imagine. Like, I don't mean superstition like, you know, ooh, spooky ghosts, but like, you know, last time they won, I drank three pints. So,
I mean, probably. I'm sure some of the fans probably have stuff. I know they like touch walls and things. No, actually, that's not. That's just me watching Friday Night Lights. That's literally what that memory
was. We are so woefully unequipped to talk about sports.
I know. This is so sad. Yeah. Let's talk about musicals again. Okay. So the only way I know anything about baseball is through musical theater, right?
Okay.
I
have so, Dan wait, Yankees, I want to guess.
Falsettos and Ragtime. Sorry, I just said them all.
What about Smash? Did you Smash?
Smash also, yep. Very, very good. But yeah, so that's literally it. And the weird thing is with each of those musicals, it's all about it being like gentlemanly and kind of showmanship, and it's all very nice.
Yeah, I think it's tongue in cheek. I think that's a very American parody thing to say is the number in Ragtime is, you know, like, what a game, like, oh, what a quaint civilized time out at the sports game, and they're all like, so's your sister, like, and there, I think that duality is pretty core to baseball. You know, baseball is quote unquote the American pastime. I would say that's more of a dated. Nowadays, I think American football is probably more popular than baseball, but I wonder what the numbers are on that. But baseball has an old-timey appeal. There's something about, you know, going to the baseball diamond for a midday summer game and getting a bag of peanuts and sitting there and watching the game. And the other thing about baseball that I think sets it apart from a lot of other, like, field sports... There's a lot of nothing, you know, when football happens, there's a lot of action and everyone's moving. When baseball happens, maybe one or two things are happening. A lot of baseball is waiting, even when the game is happening, which, you know.
Is that when you sing the song?
When you're waiting? No, you sing the song during the seventh inning stretch. And you should Wikipedia it, because I'm not going to butcher the history here.
Thank you.
But it is quintessentially American, and I think this show is playing on that very, very much. They're taking this Faust tale. You know, it's interesting because Faustus, is that his full name? Faust, the character, the original one, is what, a scientist or an intellectual? Like, he's brainy and smart. And Joe Boyd is not. You know, Joe Boyd is certainly caring, but, like, this is not a story of how an intellectual sold his soul. This is how, this is a story of how a man with passion sold his show, his soul.
It's like, it is very much like Joe America. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like how Joe America, so, and is that very, you know, I relate to that old guy, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, so these are kind of all of the building blocks as to why I think it ran for 1,000-odd performances.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, first of all, it's the baseball musical.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Nothing's ever come along to rival the baseball
musical. The baseball musical, yeah.
So, and because baseball equals America, it instantly becomes this kind of tourist trap.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, we'll go see the baseball one. is mm-hmm. really good. Yeah. You know, I mean, we know America baseball.
Yeah.
And because the characters in it, like Joe and Meg, these mm-hmm. kind of the characters at the center, are just lovely, yeah. very domestic, suburban types. Yeah. They're born of that 50s suburban idealism.
Exactly. And I would say almost too much so.
Absolutely.
You look at them and they don't have a lot of personality beyond their stereotypes.
No.
Which is really interesting. I would say I was tossing around why this show was so successful too, because I do think it's a little clunky in places and like the plot's not terribly streamlined. You know, not to fault it. It's got great music and stuff, but the pajama game has a more A to B to C to D kind of plot than this one.
Yeah.
I think things like, and I don't know how true this is in the 50s, but this is a straight man's musical, which is something I've wanted to delve into for a while, just thinking about. I'm still developing this thesis in my mind, but because it's a baseball musical, that kind of gives it an edge against whatever that musical theater stereotype is that might keep the hardworking businessman out of a Broadway show after work.
Yeah.
You know, I think shows like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels do this.
City of Angels.
Yeah.
It's got that very, like, testosterone-driven appeal.
Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, Kinky Boots lacks.
Right. Well, and, you know, they don't... When they break out into something close to a kick line, it's with tongue firmly planted in cheek. Like, you gotta have heart is a play on a vaudeville number with, like, yup, we're baseball players. And, like, it's not about how impressive their dance moves are. And it has sexy women. And it's about, you know, salacious things. And there's something, I think there's something there. I feel something there, but I don't have it fully formed in my mind.
Yeah. I would totally agree with you. I think it is. It's that it's like Pleasantville. Did you ever watch Pleasantville?
Yeah. Yes.
The film.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that very like that idealistic painting of it.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, Joe, despite, you know, Lola being the best in the business, is still like, no, I'm a monogamous man and I love my wife.
Yep.
And I miss my wife. And that's what the story is.
Right, exactly. I mean? Like, and we might get to that.
A guy loves his wife.
This kind of sexism versus feminism duality.
Yeah.
I play him with arson and with mayhem. It's a hammy routine, but it always plays. And my favorite encore was the Hundred Years' War. Yeah, those were the good old days. I gladly sailed the seven seas for just one reprise of those good old days.
Maybe this is a good time to bring up the Mr. Applegate point, though.
Yeah, I think, okay. We could talk all about this. So, and there's other interesting things about this, too. Mr. Applegate features in my musical theater is so gay video. I remembered there being more until I went back into the movie. But the Mr. Applegate character, at least in the movie, is very clearly a foppish stereotype. He dresses in lavender. His house is a giant lavender bedroom. We see his giant closet that he gets dressed in. He's clearly not attracted to Lola, despite her being the best in the business. I bet you someone has written their thesis about devil characters being gay stereotypes in media. I think that's a thing that happens a lot.
I mean, all the bloody time.
Right.
Like, literally all the time.
Yeah.
They're either the, like, epitome of sex.
Right.
Or they're totally gay and ridiculous.
Yes.
Because if you think about something like, I mean, it's a little bit more contemporary, but South Park the movie,
mm-hmm.
right? It just jumps right into that, and right. it's not, you know, it's obvious because back in the 50s, you know, the devil probably was gay because the biggest sin you could commit, you know,
exactly. And so they're drawing that association. But so apropos of almost nothing, but it's fascinating to me to point out. Ray Walston, who played Mr. Applegate yeah. in the movie, and I think on Broadway too.
Yeah.
Married to a woman, family, kids, straight, you know, yeah. no question. But in the movie, Tab Hunter, boy next door Tab Hunter, who plays yeah. Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe, very, very later in life in his autobiography, came out as gay and did his whole expose on like the closeted gay culture of Hollywood and had yep. a long-term partner. And you know, he was in publicity stories about like, is he dating Natalie Wood? Like they made up showmances for him.
Yeah.
And you know, the juxtaposition of all these things right in this musical is fascinating to me. And I'm sure Tab Hunter isn't watching and being like, that Mr. Applegate is a gay stereotype and I find that offensive. I doubt they even, you know, put that kind of stuff together. This is all accidental. But to see yeah. the demonization there, literal demonization of that right alongside of this, you know, we're trying to sell Tab Hunter as the boy next door who you're going to swoon over, and actually yeah. he's living it.
He's
you know.
Just literally a big old gay. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. It's, and like to watch him, it, you know, his whole part in the show is being tempted by sexy, sexy Lola.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
It's quite funny. In like in the YouTube comments and stuff of whatever Lola wants,
mm-hmm.
it's literally just full of, well, obviously he's gay. He's not even giving her a second look. It's just, I'm like, right. That's how it works.
Yeah,
that's
and man, that's a sign of how time has changed. Because if YouTube had existed in the 50s and 60s, the comments would be like, "Look at that man who loves his wife so much that he's going to remain exactly. monogamous." And yeah,
it's so true. But yeah, I think it's interesting to think about with the '94 revival.
Yeah,
we had Jerry Lewis.
Yes,
right. Who's like big old macho comedian.
Right.
Right. But what I think is interesting about the '94 revival is how much they changed. Like the whole tone of the show.
Yeah.
Is very different. And I think that you can weave that into your thesis as well about why did they kind of move away from the gay thing. It's still there because I think it's just in the character.
It's
in the book.
Frankly, it's funny. I mean, it, you know, yeah. I don't find it terribly offensive, uh-huh. mostly because I don't care if, I mean, the devil's obviously gay.
Yeah.
You know, I almost
exactly.
feel that.
We're fine like. With that. Yeah, this was God, so it's cool.
Right.
But like if you, yeah, because like Sean Hayes, for example, who did the Encores production.
Yes.
Like mm-hmm. Hayes' rendition of the last song, which is called
Good Old Days.
Yep. Good Old Days. Is incredible, and it's camp as anything.
Yeah.
It's literally like a Liberace concert. It's great. Do you know what I mean? He's literally on a piano.
Yeah.
And it totally works. You're right, it's not a fit. Because, it, you know, yes, he's the devil, but he's not evil. Do you
right.
know what I mean? Like, he's just...
We expect
really
him,
that hard.
We expect him to be bumbling. He's not, you know, he's a lovable villain. He's Snidely Whiplash.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. There's not that, like, don't do this, kids, because that's what the devil's like. You know, he does smoke, yeah. but, like, that's also a joke.
Uh-huh.
Because the devil
I think,
always
yeah,
smokes.
But it's, I do think back, if we go back to the 50s, mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting to think, you know, when we were talking about applause
mm-hmm.
In the All About Eve in the original film and, like, the coded gay characters in...
Right.
Like proper old Hollywood, about how that is still, you know, you can still kind of see that lingering on.
Yeah.
Into here because it's obviously more obvious.
Right.
But still just as coded in a
yeah.
way.
Yeah, they never, you know, he doesn't, like, say hello to his devil husband as he goes home or something like that.
Exactly. And I think it's just interesting to see how far it's still carried on.
Yeah. Well, and it is, I mean, I think Damn Yankees, like shows like Bye Bye Birdie, like shows like Pajama Game, have made that transition from contemporaneous piece of musical theater to period piece. Damn Yankees is now a period piece, but was not written as one. And that leaves you with some interesting fallout. You know, even things like lyric. What is the lyric? What is a wife without a husband? Like, there's a lot of stuff like that that absolutely would not fly in a musical written today. But because this was written in the 50s, we're like, oh, yeah, it's a product of its time. And it is.
Yeah, totally.
But it wasn't, someone wasn't recreating the 50s sound when they wrote this thing. It was just written then.
Yeah. Well, should we pinch that little lovely political topic batter and get right into our political meat?
Sure. Absolutely.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
You fool!
Give in. Give in.
Let's get political. Is it politics? Is it social issues?
It's what social issues. I mean, I think this heading is sexism versus feminism. In Damn Yankees. And I think it revolves around the two women in the show. Put that in the back of your mind, too.
Exactly.
But Joe's wife, Meg, and Lola Banana Pants?
Lola Banana, Lola Banana. Wait,
is she Lola Banana and he's Mr. Applegate? Maybe that's it.
It's just a whole load of fruit. Fruit is evil. Fruit is sin.
Fruit is evil. And it's gay innuendo. That's totally it.
Oh, my God. By the way, that's huge. That's it. You've cracked the code.
But so you can take both Lola and Meg separately and together. Meg is certainly fulfilling this traditional housewife role. You know, she starts the show with her and her ilk in 6 months out of every year. And side note, because I was wondering as I listened to this, does the first line rule apply to this? I was thinking the first line was when we met in 1938, which like doesn't really set the show up, but it doesn't start with that. It starts with the TV broadcast of the ball game, which makes more sense.
Yes.
But anyway, the crux of this film rests on the traditional 1950s housewife husband relationship, which looking back on, we're like, how ridiculous, but is a product of its time. Is, you know, very representative. And Joe's entire motivation throughout the show is this being pulled in both directions between his wife, Meg, who he's really committed to, and Lola. And what's initially fascinating to me about this, if we were writing Damn Yankees nowadays, we'd have to change a lot of things. But
Yeah.
One of the big things we'd have to change is we'd have to get to know Meg a little more.
Yes.
In this show as written, she's not a terribly sympathetic character. She's not unsympathetic, but it's hard to care about her relationship with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Well, in my opinion, I just don't think you see nearly enough of it.
Right. Like, he's gone, you know what I mean? In, like, two songs in.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but, like, literally after the first big scene.
Yeah. And
he's gone.
Yeah. And absolutely, Goodbye, Old Girl, is a heart-wrenching song, especially a heart-wrenching song for, like, three songs in. Like, it is moving and bordering on a tearjerker, but... Mm-hmm. You only see Joe's opinion of his relationship with his wife. The only time you see them together, like if you didn't get Goodbye, Old Girl, you'd be like, of course, you two should leave each other. You don't pay attention to each other. It sounds like he's all up in the baseball, and that's clearly not your passion, and it seems to bother you. It bothers me. You sang a whole song about how hard these 6 months of every year is. And it's all, and the song you sang is all dissonant and like filled with anger. Mm-hmm. What is your relationship? And I get that we're starting it out with the conflict and like, but so much of their relationship relies on this implied bond between husband and wife, which is the implication of that, I think, is 50s and outdated.
Yeah, I would agree. And as well, like the content of 6 months out of every year is... Gosh, us wives are so sad about the fact our husbands like baseball, but hey, we love them anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's very, like, what you gonna do?
Right, like, womp, womp.
Do you know what I mean? Well, the men are like, we love sports.
Yeah.
We love sports.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous. And it is, it's the community exposition song, you know? It's Iowa Stubborn. It's like, this is the world we're in. And it's a joke song. It's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
Speaks to how things have changed in the past half century.
Yeah, exactly.
But so then contrast...
So do you think...
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm, what you can say?
No. Go, no, keep going. What's your...
Okay. In contrast to Meg, you get Lola. Mm-hmm. Previously the ugliest woman in Providence, Rhode Island, which I would love to see a spinoff musical called The Ugliest Woman in Providence, Rhode Island. It sounds like a fascinating story.
Absolutely. Oh my God, think of the accents.
I know. Oh yeah. You could do so many like funny rhymes with the accents and this is a thing I've thought about before. I think it'd be one of the few musical prequels that would work.
Mm-hmm.
But she is a woman who uses sex for power. And I'm not up on my feminist studies, preemptive apologies. In the 50s, I would imagine people had problems with that. Like, this salacious floozy flaunting her who knows what, who knows where. You know, in the, like, a little brain's a little talent, flaunting her talent, and we're still hiding it in innuendo. I would wager there is a shift in... that kind of Lola becomes more powerful through a more contemporary lens and less dirty, naughty, like icky, which is interesting because I don't think she was written that way.
I wonder about that though.
Yeah.
We'll come on to talk about Pajama Game in a second, right? Okay. But I compare her a lot to Gladys from Pajama Game.
Yeah.
Now, I think there's like, I think you could fold these musicals over the top of each other and you'll get a beautiful.
Yeah, you know, get a wonderful mosaic. Yeah.
Yeah. But where Gladys was, you know, kind of, you're more contemporary woman, a bit headstrong there, Gladys.
Right.
I think what they've then done as time has gone on, is really start to paint much more of a, like, this is what happens if you keep going Gladys's way, you become the devil's servant.
Right, yeah.
Selling yourself for sex. Because the thing is Lola, you know, she don't get her happy ending.
Right.
She, it's just, she kind of ends the show with a bit of like, meh.
Yeah, I guess I'm ugly now.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And she has done nothing
right.
to deserve that, other than just, like, also sell her soul.
Right, but like, be a wholesome human nothing. Being, slash immortal devil servant.
Yeah, and then also it's a bit like, you know, it says something about the whole ugliness thing, and like, well, there's right. your punishment, you gotta yeah, be ugly, exactly. that's We're gonna, bad.
Yeah, but like, that's how it's written, but we... I see parallels to Lola in contemporary things where that kind of is written as a woman with power.
Yeah.
And I do think even now the pendulum might be swinging back a little bit. Like,
right.
Uh-huh. You know, and who am I to comment? But, like, women can have... Why do women need to use their sex for power? Why can't they just have power?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting... to look at the two of them together, to look at the two of them in the context of this musical, and because they are, you know, they're foils to each other.
Very much so.
Which is...
They could have a really interesting duet, I always think. I think they're missing a Meg-Lola duet.
I think that would update things very, very well. Especially if, you know, Meg has some kind of pre-prize with Joe at the beginning of the thing... it would flesh them both out so much more. It also justifies, because like Joe kind of falls for Lola anyway, which is supposed to be the thing that's gonna trip him up. Like he I only know. Falls for her wonder... once the jig is up, and so then it's okay. Maybe.
Do you think he does fall for her? There's a question. Do you think
they kiss?
Because I, but I don't think, because I think Two Lost Souls is just. Like, it's, I see it as really platonic.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I think
it's like a buddy song.
I don't, in my worldview perspective, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But it is weird to me that they have, this is why I call the plot unstreamlined and like a little
sloppy. I think that's just a sheer flaw in the book.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
But I think like it's, you know, it's either they don't know their goal or an untapped opportunity to kind of play on the gray, on the like, you know, not one way or the other about this sort of thing. Like Joe can fall for Lola a little bit and still love his wife. And I think that's a moral you could play. That's a moral you should play up if you do Damn Yankees now. But I don't know if it was so under there in the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, like, in the 50s, they were not there to take risks. That was not the time to... years less advanced than medium and musical theater.
Yeah.
Like, it was all about, let's create big shows. You know, after West Side Story kicked off, it was like, big shows.
Let's get some pop songs, let's sell some records, let's make a film.
Exactly. It wasn't theater.
Here
we are. And I think that's... But no, you're right. It'd be really, really interesting to do... But I guess, with 1994, they like rewrote so much.
Yeah.
But none of it... I don't know why.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know why they chose to rewrite the things they chose to rewrite.
It's this weird thing that I think happens with revivals of musical theater. I think the Encore's production is the same way, is where, you know, it's like when they revived Les Mis. We're not watching this because it's a new piece of theater that we want to do right now that fits the times.
Yeah.
We're watching this because we want to remember the previous piece of theater.
Yeah.
You know, every revival of... Sound of Music is like this. Like, we're not bringing back Sound of Music. I mean, maybe nowadays would be the time to do Sound of Music again. Let's talk about punching some Nazis. But generally, it's like, the fond times of remembering the last time we did this musical. Which, I don't think there's too much wrong with. But when you have a musical like this with some outdated and borderline offensive... you know, previous stereotypes, it's worth it to take a look at the things you bring to an audience. And if there are true to art ways you can contemporize or update or like there's some revival, a regional theater did of The Music Man, where they brought it from the 20s to, I think, the 50s or 60s. And the idea was that's the same math that would have been done for the original audience. So, like, an audience in the 90s seeing something in the 50s would have felt like an audience in the 60s seeing something in the 20s. Working on that gap and updating it, and like they made the school board, army men, and like just updated a couple things here and there. And I think it really gives it a new context. It still doesn't seem like you're violating the author's intent because you're still aiming towards the same goals they're working for. You just have new information because as a society, we've been alive for longer.
I mean, that's the thing about the content of it. There really is nothing in it, you know, apart from the fact they don't have cell phones. Like, there's nothing in it that gives it a time period.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We still have baseball.
Baseball.
We still have relationships.
Yeah.
The devil's still kicking about. Like, let's go. You know what I mean? It's there's really nothing.
Yeah. Damn Yankees is totally worth an update. Damn Yankees is totally worth a, like, Fox or NBC live musical, I think.
So, well, they did one, didn't go very well. They were going to do another?
Really?
Yeah, in 2009 this got announced. 2009.
No way.
That Jim Carrey was going to be playing Applegate.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Right, and then who was the one that was supposed to be playing Jim Carrey and Jake Gyllenhaal was supposed to be playing Joe. I'm like, why didn't that happen? Obviously, Jim Carrey stopped acting, but...
Yeah.
Come on.
That would have been great.
That would could be so good.
Yeah.
But what would they have done with it?
Yeah. I mean...
Do you know what I mean? Would they have changed it? I don't know if they would.
I think this going the way of the Matthew Broderick Music Man, which certainly has its flaws, would have been really good. Like, they added a bunch of things. There's a couple weird dream sequences, you know. I think Damn Yankees could really use it. Because also, people aren't as tied to this show as they are to other shows.
Like I say, I think it's the baseball musical.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I think that's what...
Yeah, and the rest of it, something with the devil and Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo and, you know, who put the pain when we did the Mambo. What? We'll talk about that.
I wonder if... maybe it's something to do with the rights. Maybe, like, the estate of Wallop is so tied up that he's like, you ain't changing anything, son.
It could also be, I mean, it's the problem with, and pardon me, the motherfucker with the hat. It's hard to advertise something like Damn Yankees on a marquee and in the TV guide and on billboards. And, you know, it does have the word damn in it.
It does.
Naughty, naughty.
Cursed themselves, really, haven't they? Well, that's... So in the UK, they changed the movie title to What Lola Wants.
Yeah.
Which I think is ridiculous, because that's not what this film's about.
No, it's not. But they do put Glenn Verdon on the poster, so...
Yeah, and, like, that is the song that everyone knows, so sure, that's smart. But what...
sheep in the wilds of the hills, far from the other Jacks and the Jills, we wandered away and went astray. But we ain't fussing, cause we got us, and we're two lost souls on the highway of life. And there is no one with whom we would rather say, ain't it just great? Ain't it just grand? We got each other wherever we go, whatever.
So,
we
I mentioned it briefly, I teased it. Because I'm a tease.
Yes,
I'm Lola.
Naturally.
I know that's what you think. Basically, so Damn Yankees, like we said before, is the second musical produced by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that they produced was the Pajama Game,
which is
both Tommy and I have been in.
I think this is the only musical we've discovered that we've both been in.
I think it is, by the way, which is quite cool. Oh, well, I directed Into the Woods. You've been in
Into the Woods. I guess so, yeah.
But you know, we have both acted roles.
Yeah.
Were you Heinzie?
I was Heinzie, right? Yes.
You were Heinzie. I was a worker. I think in the script he's called Worker.
He's actually called Worker? Because the script of the show, everyone has names.
Yup. So I think I've told this story before, I think I was equally bitter then. I'm going to reprise it. There's no better time, except when we do the Pajama Game podcast where I'll spill the real tea. So yeah, everyone in the cast got a role. Everyone in the cast got a line. It got to this last thing, one of the last things we ever blocked. And the director was going to give the line to someone else. And I was like, it's a horrible moment, but excuse me, I'm the only person in the cast without a line. Could I maybe do this? And he was like, considered it. This one line. Yeah, okay. And I was like, I'm not bad. Like, I'm actually okay. Do you know what I mean? And hey, I nailed that line.
Yes, and?
And then I got to have a bigger... The line is... This'll wake them up.
I do remember Thank this. Thank you. I remember being equally Rupturous as amused last time.
Yep. And then, because it was such a good line delivery, I got to hold a giant pencil and notepad in 7.5 cents. Makes sense,
weird...
doesn't it?
So, okay. Both these shows have weird songs.
Yeah.
Agree or disagree.
That's true. Absolutely. What I would also say is both these shows have the same songs.
Yeah, I would say, and this happens with other things too. Like this, you can take Guys and Dolls and How to Succeed in Business and put them up next to each other. Like,
you definitely can.
Especially in the like 40s, 50s, 60s, people really worked on their formula shows.
They really, I mean, yeah, like if you look at Rodgers and Hammerstein,
yeah,
it's glittering all the way through. But what I think is interesting about these guys, the first time you hear Pajama Game, you're like, this is really interesting. This is like different. This is a bit wacky.
Yeah.
And you're really intrigued. And then they just kind of brought that kind of same wacky formula and slapped it into Damn Yankees. So I'm going to go through some examples. We have the kind of rousing situational ensemble number. In Pajama Game, we have Once a Year Day. In Damn Yankees, we have Sheila Stroh from Hannibal Mo.
Both songs where by the time you get to the end, you don't know where the beginning was.
Exactly, because it's been about 20 minutes. And, you know, the massive dance showcase. It's very, very big. Lots is happening. There's some modulation. Great. And actually, interestingly enough, a little cheeky first Fosse fact of the... Oh, we haven't said Fosse choreographed this.
Now we have.
We haven't said that yet. We've said it now. When he was in Pajama Game, when he was involved in the filming of Pajama Game, he got very, very involved in the shooting. Because normally at that stage, they would just do a lot of like prosarch filming. So they would film the number as is. But he started to get really dynamic with the shots and like took elements of his choreography and like framed them individually. You can see it through every single Fosse film.
Yeah.
Or like film where Fosse choreography is featured. You can see it in Damn Yankees as well, particularly in this number. Just a little tidbit. We've got your kind of smoky jazz club number, Two Lost Souls, Hernandez Hideaway.
They're like next to each other.
Literally. You have the kind of down on yourself love ballad, Goodbye Old Girl, New Town. Or the other one. Puppet on a string?
Hey there, with the stars in your eyes.
Exactly. No. You've got the situational comedy reveal song. We've got the game, and we've got I would judge her. What's it? Never be jealous again. Never be jealous again.
I would trust her. Yeah.
A live performance of Tommy as Hines.
I got complimented by the school voice teacher. She very much enjoyed the blend I used in my voice throughout
beautiful.
That whole show.
What a beautiful compliment. Then I think the one to top it off, obviously, is Steam Heat.
Right.
And who's got the pay?
The completely unnecessary, manufactured, we're putting on a show for no apparent reason during this show, iconic Bob Fosse choreography number.
I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Interestingly, and you didn't point this out, and I wonder if you noticed, do you know what disappeared between the pajama game and Damn Yankees?
What do you mean disappeared?
What was in the pajama game and not in Damn Yankees? A stalwart of like American musical theater. Yeah.
The ballet.
There's no dream ballet in Damn Yankees.
But there was supposed to be. Yeah. There was supposed to be a musical theater gorilla, a musical chair gorilla ballet.
I mean, we may have just inadvertently pinpointed the death of the dream ballet.
I'm sure someone will correct us on that. I'm sure there'll be another one.
But maybe the beginning of the death. Maybe the beginning of... Uh-huh. And it does make sense that it happens maybe to his chagrin, but under Bob Fosse's auspices. Where we're seeing this change in what is considered legit choreography in musical theater. And we don't have to include a ballet piece to still feel like our choreography is worth something.
And that's the thing as well. It's like, because when Bob Fosse does a ballet, it's not... kind of your ballet as you know it. He will
It's a Bob Fosse
apply
ballet.
His own narrative. Do you know what I mean? I just think I find it really interesting, and I wonder, you know, is it just smart writing? Is it lazy? You know, if they did write other musicals, would they be doing the same thing, and then would they just get tired? Like, obviously Pajama Game won the Tony, Damn Yankees won the Tony.
It works. I mean,
they're both,
I think...
solid musicals. They both ran for performances. Like,
this is totally a chicken and egg question, though, because if you spend too much time staring at contemporary musicals, you start seeing the same patterns. I know this very well. Like, I think you can generalize these things into similar structures all the time, and of course, similar authors end up with similar structures. This is where I, you know, want to be in the room where it happened. We haven't done a Hamilton reference for a long time. To see if they sat down and were like, all right, these were the numbers that worked in this one. How are we going to do exactly the same thing? Or if they just kind of fell into these things because that's what they do.
I don't think it's any coincidence that the numbers that I mentioned are the biggest numbers in both shows.
Oh, absolutely. I wonder.
And the most popular numbers. You know?
I wonder how it went down, because it's like, it could easily be like, all right, Bob, this is going to be your number. Do something like you did with Steam Heat. We really like what you did with Steam Heat. We got this one. It doesn't, you know, we can change it a lot because it's not really a plot show or a plot song. Yeah. And, you know, just make the choreography look really good and things like that. I do think it is interesting to. Then it becomes interesting to compare these numbers looking forward as the progression, because you think of something like, or maybe the ones you didn't mention, but that still fall into the same categories, like the intro song in Pajama Game might be the Pajama Game theme, but is probably more Racing with the Clock. You know?
Yeah, I do find it, because there are, I would say, to give them credit, there are definitely moments where there is deviation. Like, the stuff that they play with in Racing with the Clock, and then the slowdown, I think is, like, really musically interesting.
Yes. Yeah. But even, you know, if you look at how melodic both those are, the Pajama Game theme and Racing with the Clock, compared to 6 months out of every year, da 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 da. 6 months out of every year, like we get much more complex and with much more interesting intervals and much jazzier and much stranger and like point and counterpoint. You know, those things, like things like even well. And maybe Steam Heat and Who's Got the Pain went the other way, because Steam Heat is weirder than Who's Got the Pain. Not plot-wise, but, like, song-wise. I got...
Oh, do you think?
Yeah, I got Steam Heat.
That's
In terms of, like, the song. Not, like, in the context, but, like, as
Yeah, because I would say in the context, it does work. Whereas,
No, in context, both of them are the ridiculous. Pain, like,
what is happening?
Yeah, no, Steam Heat makes a little more sense than... Who's Got the Pain when we do the mambo.
Yeah. Yeah. I do wonder. And what I'd love to know, and I've still not been able to find that out, is how much Fosse had influence in that number. Because a huge part of Fosse's choreography is those subtle beats. It's the little moments.
Yeah.
The little kind of idiosyncrasies that a song has. So like your clucks and like your...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
These are the things that Fosse loves to pick up on and highlight.
Yeah.
And, you know, did he do any... Probably not at this stage. He's still very young. But it would be interesting to know, did he do any work with them? Or did they write it and he left, I love these little moments.
Yeah, can
and then
we
in the future brought
them?
Those in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's interesting.
That is very interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I also think it's... talking about songs, we're seeing still the division between like legit singers and musical theater singers, and
yeah,
you
for sure.
really see that in how they set up their characters and their songs. Like you get Joe Hardy and what's his name, the protagonist in Pajama Game,
Sid. Yeah,
generic McGenericson. Right? But they all get these like really legit, really classical vibrato influence, like I am singing a song sort of things. And then you get these other characters who's like, you know, singing out of the side of their mouth, and you gotta have heart and ha 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 heart, and like really diving into what we now see as the more contemporary musical theater sound of like putting the character in the song.
For sure.
It's all
exactly. And it's like, you know, there was always that kind of one person. You had your Mermans, who would be like your kind of stalwart woman. But I think what Gwen started to do was bring more of the kind of acting side to it. And she started to find the balance between your legit sopranos and your Mermans is...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you listen to her recording of Whatever Lola Wants, and you get this very legit Whatever Lola Wants, but then she can, you know, go cuckoo ka-choo and like all the other bits right in the middle and flow back and forth between them.
Yeah. And you know, she can dance. You know, she can really truly dance.
Yeah.
So hey, speaking of dancing, let's talk about my man. Who's got the pain when they go, who needs a pill when they do? And here I'm just going to sing, oh, my man, I love him so, he'll never know. Oh, my life is just a game. So I've got my book. I've done some highlighting.
Okay. So enlighten me about Mr. Fosse.
So, I mean, it's no strange, you know, there's no, what's the phrase? It's no.
You're no stranger to Fosse. I'm no stranger to love.
It's no.
You know the rules and so do I.
I'm a stranger in paradise. Kismet. What a reference. So yeah, I love Bob Fosse. I kind of always have. That was, you know, one of the first forays into musical theater I ever had, was seeing Cabaret and being like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then I got Fosse. And then was like, ah, this is perfect. And this is that was the first time I ever saw Damn Yankees was on the Fosse.
Was on the Fosse,
show.
Yeah.
I was like, that's odd. Tracked it down.
Yes.
But what interestingly kind of in the Bob Fosse story, Damn Yankees is extremely important because this is the meeting of Bob and Gwen. And she changed his life. Like she kind of shaped his life. She probably saved his life. And kind of vice versa. You couldn't have had one without the other. And yeah, Damn Yankees, of all things.
Of all things,
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because it's not
very, very weird.
When you say Damn Yankees, people remember the non-Bob Fosse things. They remember Whatever Lola Wants. They remember You Gotta Have Heart. You know, they might remember 6 months out of every year. They don't remember Two Lost Souls. You know, maybe they can think about Who's Got the Pain, but like the whole the whole dance break in Two Lost Souls is so Bob Fosse, and
it's,
like,
yeah,
it's not that it's forgettable, but it's just not. He hasn't built it into the show yet, you know.
Yeah, well, it's because this is Bob Fosse before he's Bob Fosse.
Right.
You know, when you look at really early stuff, he just goes a lot more legit, because what at that time what you had is you had Jerry Robbins, who was blowing it out the park, with choreography and changing the game in terms of narrative choreography, and Bob actually felt a lot of pressure because of that to basically try and attain the same career. But what he found difficult was emulating that.
Yeah.
He really loved, you know, dancing at that, and it's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might give my first quote. Basically, yeah, so he was always very specific, which we all know his isolations are impeccable. But in the early stages, he was very acrobatic, very balletic. So it was kind of Gene Kelly style, with like little moments of Fosse because of his body.
Right.
And then, yeah, so he said that he thinks of dancing as sheer joy, as exhilaration, as running, as jumping, as athletic, like a trapeze artist. And that's very much early Fosse. You really see that element before he started to develop, you know, the kind of the Fosse style.
Right. That's not a little hand snap. That's not a little, you know, hip wiggle.
Yeah, it's closer to just being a full-on, like, grand jeté across the stage.
Yeah.
It's so I find Damn Yankee is really, really interesting because of that. Because this is, you're starting to see him turn because he's found Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the moment they met, she was originally just going to get the part, but he wanted her to audition.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did, and he was very nervous about meeting her. She was obviously very nervous about meeting him,
right.
Blah, 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 blah. But the second they danced together, they just fell in love there and then. It literally happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent so much of their time together kind of poring over their diaries and talking about their experiences with dance.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons that Fosse's choreography looks the way it does is because of his body. So he was pigeon-toed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his toes were turned in,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if you know anything about dance, is like the opposite of what you want for any sort of legit dance. He also, you know, had awful posture.
Mm-hmm.
And Gwen, when she was young, had rickets.
Oh, wow.
And she was completely knock-kneed. And, you know, did a lot of work to turn that out, but her state was turned in. So they weirdly bonded over that fact and kind of found that affinity with each other, because that's, you know, something really personal that they shared.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just see if I can find the diary bit. Yeah, so they started basically, yeah, just kind of sharing all the things. So he would tell her about why he liked to use bowler hats, which, you know, has become really iconic in Steam Heat.
Yeah.
And basically, the only reason he liked doing that is because he got used to them covering his bald spot. Gwen using her hands in her isolations really, really subtly. The reason that happened was because she learned sign language when she was really, really young, from just a girl in her school. And just all of these little things, which are so key to everything that came after, all happened in this moment because of Dan Yankees, which I just find fascinating.
That's wonderful.
I have lots to say about Fosse, and I feel like, you know, we're going to do many shows that he's involved in, so I'm not going to play all my aces. But this is a very important moment, because mm-hmm. this is the beginning.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool to see we have this record of it, you know?
Yes.
You can watch it.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, exactly. You can trace. That's what's so good about Fosse, is you can trace his development.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can do that as easily, because there's not really been anyone as iconic mm-hmm. as Fosse. I mean, I don't know as much about like legit ballet. I'm talking about in a musical theater context. There's right. no one as iconic as Fosse.
Well, and it does. And
who's developed their style as much.
Yeah. I'm no choreography expert, but it does feel like Fosse's progression mirrored more of that of like what we consider now a traditional painter's progression of like, you know, having your blue phase or whatever it is. But like seeing the experimentation and the change and the forward moving, which I don't know, and perhaps it's just because Fosse's so iconic, mm-hmm. but I don't know if you see so much in other choreographers. They just have a style. And that thing is their style, yeah. and then you see their style, and you like it or you don't, and that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because he, initially at the start, was trying to emulate loads of other people, mm-hmm. and it wasn't what he naturally had inside him.
Yeah.
But he, because he was so passionate about acting, so passionate about performance and telling a story with dance, in a very almost literal sense, mm-hmm. That kind of gave him his edge. And as he started being more and more successful mm-hmm. With Gwen alongside him, he just was able to be himself a lot more.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Could take a lot more risks. And he just kept knocking out the park,
mm-hmm.
to yeah. use a phrase.
Hey. Ah, I see that baseball phrase you pulled out there.
Thank you very much, Tommy. Thank you. I'm extremely proud of that. But I think, yeah, like Lola as a role is just such a great thing to have. Like you say, yeah. it's a great thing that we've got that. And, you know, there are people like Bebe Neuwirth, who is a sort of, contemporary, but I guess she's not very right. contemporary
not
anymore.
Not very contemporary, but probably, if but, you think you know, of Bebe Neuwirth nowadays, maybe that's a good Gwen Verdon comparison, if Gwen Verdon's
yeah,
a bizarre
exactly.
name to
uh-huh.
you.
Because you've got Gwen Verdon, then you had Anne Rankin, and then I would say Bebe Neuwirth is a very good contemporary Fosse emulator.
Yeah.
Emulator? Yeah, I guess that works.
Practitioner.
Practitioner, yes. Uh-huh. And she can keep up, basically,
yeah, exactly.
with it, you know?
Yeah.
Lola is just such an interesting character, because you kind of see all of the strands. Mm. So with whatever Lola wants, you see his burlesque background,
mm-hmm.
And then as you travel through the show and you get towards Two Lost Souls, mm. you do start to see a lot of his, you know, there's a lot of Sweet Charity.
Oh,
in Two
yes.
Lost Souls.
Oh, it could be straight from Sweet Charity.
I mean, really, really could.
In the movie, that moment where the one dancer like walks into frame with her shoulders back and her arms down by her hips and yeah. like looking off and pauses for a moment. And then Joe
exactly.
takes his jacket off and throws it over her head. And then she continues yeah. off in a straight line. Like,
yep.
that is That's a very perfect. Particular kind of Fosse that I mean, like we saw it for the first time right there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like he teased us in Hernando's Hideaway and then yeah. like, hey, we're in limbo now. So I'm allowed.
Right.
Here we go. And then, you know, we brought it into the real world. So, yeah. So I guess that's part one of the Fosse biopic.
Of Jimmy's Fosse saga.
We have a next one.
A multi-part exactly. series.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I would do it. I'm just obsessed. And mm-hmm. everyone, like, it's very easy to get obsessed with Bob
oh, yeah.
Fosse. It's just perfect. So go out and watch all of his stuff. I just have one last thing to say.
Yes.
I was just reading my notes. Who the hell is Vicky Lewis?
Where,
and why isn't she everywhere?
Who is Vicky Lewis?
Vicky Lewis played Gloria in the 1994 revival, and she sings
uh-huh.
The solo line in Shoeless Joe in the Tony performance, and it's a sensational performance. It's like vocally knockout. And I'm like, you are this size of a role in this show. Who are you, Vicky Lewis?
Good job, Vicky Lewis.
Thanks, Vicky. And that's what this podcast is really about.
Good, Vicky Lewis, the podcast.
Vicky Lewis.
I hate the movie ending.
Oh, yeah.
That's all there is to say about it.
Okay, that's perfect. Oh, well, here we go. Here's a great thing.
Uh-huh.
If you hate the movie ending, listeners, let's discuss that on Reddit. Let's carry on the conversation. Tommy won't be there, but it's fine.
I don't know what you're trying to... Listen, it's August. School has started.
I know, because you were very active over the summer.
Yes,
you were
there. I was, like, and it's changed because of exterior forces.
That's okay. It's okay. Because I'm holding the fort.
Yeah, and Jimmy emails me the interesting comments.
Yeah, exactly. So if you've got something to say about the ending of the movie, that will get Tommy's attention.
And I will stroke my beard and go, and then move on.
Shoeless Joe from Cannibal Bone.
Strong as the heart of a mighty oak.
Shoeless Joe from Cannibal Bone. Lucky are we to be having him.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo.
Just when the future was looking grim.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo came a long, long way to be with us today. With arms of steel like Hercules. Feet as fleet as Mercury. He'll fight for us, do right for us.
He'll be a beacon light for us.
He's Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo. Go, 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 go. Go like a bat out of you know where.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo.
Strike out the foe, let him know you're there.
Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo. Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo.
So that was Damn Yankees.
It damn well was.
Oh, what a naughty word. And I now feel like I'm an expert on baseball.
Are you gonna go out for spring training next spring?
Yeah, absolutely. Joe DiMaggio.
Say more. Name another baseball player.
Babe Ruth.
Okay. See if you can. Can you get five?
Oh.
Can you get three?
Oh, do you know what I tried to? Daryl Strawberry. I'm just trying to remember the Simpsons episode. Come on, I got three.
You
That's
did get three.
Good.
I'm proud of you. You also have a quiz question for us.
I do. Would you like to hear it?
No.
So thanks very much.
Da-da-da-da-da. Well, somebody get us another drink.
That's the start of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I always listen to them backwards. To That's my problem.
Yeah. That is your issue. I told you this. Oh, dearie. Okay. The Tony Award-winning leading actress in this show that we're going to be talking about next week auditioned for the show with a ballad. She sang, "What did I have that I don't have from On a Clear Day You Can See Forever?" Now, when asked if she had an up-tempo song, this actress responded, "No, but I can sing this one five times faster." And so she did, and got the part.
Thank goodness.
What show? And yeah, thank goodness.
If you want to get in contact with us, you know the drill. I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube.
And I am Asen Hendrix on Twitter and YouTube.
And our show Twitter is Jim and Tomic, or you can go to jimandtomic.com, which is a link to the Reddit discussion where Jimmy talks about the show.
I do. I answer your lovely things. Yes, do tell all your pals all about us. And we will see you next week.
Toodaloo.
For a very special... Should we say that now?
We should say
for
that now.
For a very special episode, it will be our 50th happy hour.
I'm excited about this. And
we're basically alcoholics.
Basically. And this show's probably going to be like 5 hours long.
Yeah, exactly. Get ready.
See you then.
Bye.
You don't pick a key because it's ball game. Take me out to the field. Crowd. Buy me some peanuts.
Good. And Cracker Jack.
There you go.
I don't care if I ever get back for it.
Root for.
Oh, roots. I thought it was woof. Root.
Who do you root for?
Root for the batter.
Cubbies.
If they don't win,
it's a shame.
For it's one.
Two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. And then you go, woo! And everyone shoots their guns in the air because it's America.
Is that baseball?
That's baseball. It's a lot of sporting events. I knew a kid in high school whose piano teacher was the organ player at a big baseball stadium.
That's great. What a lovely honor.
Right. He only knew like 6 songs, and they would take me out to the ball game and do, 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 and yeah.
And now I shall perform the national pastime from Smash.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.